baby. The final hour of the week here on First Up. Friday morning, we are feeling fantastic here on the show. Karolnik and Coley Acabo. Huge weekend in the city of Toronto as the Leafs and the Bruins game number 4 on Saturday night. And tonight, it's Shohei Ohtani and the Dodgers in town. Let the booze rain down on Ohtani, who used the Jays as leverage to get more money from the Dodgers. I don't know if that's actually the case, and we know the whole story about the airplane and the sushi restaurant.
Oh, it's the case.
Who knows how it all played out. Let's welcome in our good friend from ESPN. It's Buster Olney, who I imagine is in great spirits this morning as his Minnesota Vikings have their quarterback of the future in J.J. McCarthy. What's up, Buster? How we doing?
Yep. Rainbows and sunshine all over the place. We got our quarterback going forward. We, you know, he's got a year apprenticeship. We got Sam Darnold. We got great offensive weapons. We got a good defensive, a linebacker with our second first round pick yesterday. It was a great day. And you've already answered my question because I was going to ask you guys what kind of response, Ohtani would get from the crowd. And based on what you just said, I think it's going to be loud, and I don't think it's going to be welcoming.
I think you're skeptical, Carlo. He's getting booed tonight, 100%. Yes.
Okay, but why?
I don't know. It's funny.
Tell me, Buster, tell me why Ohtani's going to get booed. What did he do wrong in all this? The guy was at home when somebody else speculated he was on a plane.
Well, and Carlo, you know this better than I do, but you know my perception of a lot of that goes on during free agency is, a player will be told by his agent, hey, it'd be really good if you talked to Team X. It'd be really great if you talked to Team Y. And, if you're representing Ohtani in that situation last year, I'm assuming they were looking for other teams that would push the bidding against the Dodgers. And so here come the Blue Jays with an acute need for a left-handed hitter, an international market. And so I wonder if Ohtani was just, if Nez, his agent basically said, yeah, let's go talk to the Blue Jays. Let's create this wild card in the negotiation. Ohtani, maybe, working through his translator was like, okay. And so did he do anything wrong that anybody else, who was looking at it? It's like turning in multiple, job applications that he essentially did. And so to get booed for that would seem kind of silly. But on the other hand, we did have that day of craziness and the expectations of fans being built up. So I agree with you. You're probably going to get booed.
Yeah, I don't think it's about the Jays being used as leverage so much as it was. There was an expectation. There was a belief in this city that Ohtani was coming on a plane to Toronto. And there
but
was
not
a
because
conference.
It came out of Ohtani's
No,
nose.
No, I understand that. I understand that. But you're giving sports fans too much credit here.
No, I get it. They want
people are extremely passionate.
Well, can I jump in with a?
Of course.
I'll jump in with a thought here. See if you guys agree with me on this. As you guys are talking, I'm like, you know what? In some respects, the response to Ohtani last night is going to be him having to pay for the fact that through the years, the Blue Jays have always been the team where people didn't want to go there, right? Because players didn't want to go through customs. Or maybe they had some, weird perception of, well, I don't know if I want to play in another country, whatever. But it feels like that after, years of being used as a stalking horse, and the Blue Jays have been used as that by many free agency through the years, that Ohtani's going to answer for that.
I think that's a great point, Buster, and I think it's also going to be a reflection on how Toronto Blue Jays fans feel about this current management team and what type of team that's been put together this year, one that has underperformed, especially at the plate. They're 500 after their rain-shortened game yesterday against Kansas City. And this is an outlet. We even saw it in the Blue Jays home opener. John Schneider was booed. How often are managers booed after 89 win seasons? And we know how it played out with Berríos and the early hook that for Kikuchi in the second game against Minnesota. But what I think tonight, assuming Ohtani is booed, more so represents is the discontent that Toronto Blue Jays fans have with Atkins and Shapiro and the current guys in charge. I think that's what it boils down to it, and maybe it's almost a subconscious thing for Blue Jays fans. When Ohtani gets booed, they're really booing Atkins and Shapiro.
Well, and I think your point about Schneider is a great one. And I know John a little bit. I don't know him well, but I'm sure that him having been in baseball, he completely gets that, right? Like, fans can't boo Ross. They can't boo Mark. They don't have that opportunity. But when John Schneider goes out and he makes a pitching change, that's their opportunity to boo somebody. And now, because of how that situation played out last winter, and I told you at the time, I think there was no chance he was going to the Blue Jays unless all the other teams said, no, we're not going to bid on him. I think they absolutely were used as a stalking horse, which is standard operating procedure in a negotiation with free agents. That's just the way it plays out. You know, and I don't blame the Blue Jays for shooting their shot. You know, what happened if, I mean, they didn't know what the Dodgers had on the table. What if it was, in fact, they were the team that was going to be $150 to $200 million apart from any other team for the most unique talent in baseball history? I don't think the Blue Jays did anything wrong either.
Yeah, I agree.
But, you know, the result is that he's in the other uniform tonight. He's in the visiting team's uniform, and they're going to respond to that.
Speaking of uniform, it would be the ultimate troll job if the Dodgers made a mistake with Ohtani's jersey and put Morosi on the back instead of Ohtani.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
I was saying, Buster, you should throw out the first pitch tonight.
Oh, wow.
No, we're not going to have you. Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say, JP Morosi is a really, he's a nice person. And he would be the sort of, have the sense of humor where if he were to be asked to do that, he probably would have a big laugh over it and be able to chuckle at himself.
Well, that's why we're laughing at it. We're trying to poke fun at it. We're not really mad at Morosi. Mistakes happen. Buster, I got, so through, after yesterday's loss, the Blue Jays are 500 again, and they play in an American League East division right now where you look at the teams in there, everyone's either at 500 or over 500, a couple games within each other. Like, the Blue Jays cannot afford to go on a big losing streak here or a losing stretch and expect to contend in this division with how good everybody else is playing. How much longer do you think they put up with this offense struggling as much as they are and decide to make a change either with players or with coaches that control that?
Yeah, I would be surprised if they made a change with coaches, this early. And here's the problem is that, you know, through my conversations, through many years with people in front offices, making a change with a lineup early in the season is really hard. Making trades is really hard. Typically teams like to play about a quarter of the season before they draw their conclusions. Now, you know, the Blue Jays have the benefit of, I mean, since they essentially rolled out the same group of saying, okay, well, it's not just a quarter of this season, it's all of last season. At some point, you begin to make adjustments. But the one, you know, I think one bit of hope on for the Blue Jays as they look at how they've performed so far is that you would assume at some point that Bo Bichette gets back to being Bo Bichette, right? And that is a reasonable expectation. If they were sitting there saying, yeah, we think George Springer is going to become a 300 hitter, that would be something else. I do think there's a positive sign with how Varsho has started the year. You know, he's been their most productive offensive player in terms of power. So we'll see if they actually get better. But I don't really think that given the structure of the team, given the time of year, given what the prices are in the trade market and how you essentially would have to pay, you know, retail plus 40%, I don't think there's going to be a lot of change there. I think they have to hope that Bo and Vladdy, like they hoped during the wintertime, would be able to lead a turnaround.
ESPN MLB insider Buster Olney is our guest. This is hour four of First Up, and we talked about yesterday's game that was rain shortened, five innings. John Schneider, the manager of the Jays, was not impressed with the umpires, the decisions made around calling that game after five. Let's listen to what Schneider said yesterday, Buster, and we'll have you react.
First and foremost, I think that the entire day was handled, you know, kind of poorly just from starting the game. What was said out there was the fact that the field was unplayable and didn't want to continue the game. My opinion, the field was significantly better than it was in the third, fourth, and fifth inning, and made that very known to Chris and the crew. I think they were respectful and understandable. You know, they understood that. Way to lose a game.
You think Schneider has a beef with the umpires yesterday, Buster?
Yeah, he does. Look, you can't see how it played out and in the end say, yeah, that was all handled the right way. You know, and I don't know what the communication was in the first, two or three innings between the umpires and the grounds crew. But the bottom line is when you have the situation where, you know, you have a long rain delay and that's when they decide, yeah, the field's just not in good shape. That means somewhere along the way it was mishandled. And Chris is a terrific umpire and he's very respected by people in the game. But, you know, whether it was him or whether it was what was communicated by the groundskeepers or how they, maintained the field along the way, somewhere a mistake was made. And you can understand why, the Blue Jays were upset, that John was upset. And I think to some degree, I don't know if you saw it, but the Royals were upset. Like, you know, in the groundhog day after day after day of a baseball season, having a situation where you wait 3.5 hours and then you cancel the game because the field's unplayable, it's just not acceptable.
I think you're spot on. And that whole thing was a debacle yesterday, sitting around and waiting for that game to resume, and eventually it didn't. And considering the circumstances around it, I totally empathize with Schneider. Now they got to contend with Ohtani and company starting tonight. As disgruntled as Blue Jays fans are with the start of the season, again, the Jays are 13-13. Houston Astros fans, Buster, must be melting down right now. This team is horrendous. What are they, 7-19? The Houston Astros are 7-19. What is going on, and how, if, can they get it back on the rails? Is that even a possibility at this point?
Yeah, and this is a team, a franchise, that's made the American League Championship Series 7 years in a row, right? Wow. And so to play at this standard, Alex Bregman has never seen anything like this in his professional life, a team this bad. Look, it starts with the fact that they, had a thinner rotation because of injuries. Verlander was not on the roster, as you guys know, at the start of the year. He's back now, but then Framber Valdez went down and Christian Javier went down and Jose Urquidy went down. And guys that they needed to step in, like Hunter Brown, have not done well. The bullpen's been something of a mess, in the middle in particular. Now, the one saving grace to this start is nobody in the American League West, which in theory has some really great teams, defending champion, Texas Rangers, the Seattle Mariners. No one has run away with this division. So it's bought time for them. The one thing I would say, Max Scherzer probably is going to be back in the big leagues within 10 days. He's going to be activated for the Rangers. Jacob deGrom, later in the summer, he's going to be activated. He looks great in his rehab work that he's doing. Down the line, at some point, the Rangers are going to gather steam and they potentially could take off. So the Astros have to rope-a-dope it early on, hang in there, rely on their offense, and try to get their pitching right. But it is a mess right now.
Buster, I just want to take you back a couple days ago. Yankees were playing Oakland, and Hunter Wendelstadt was behind the plate and kicked out Aaron Boone. And we've got a segment on our show called Pigeon or Peacock, where peacock, you praise the person, and a pigeon is someone you just don't respect. How big of a pigeon of a move was that by Hunter Wendelstadt to kick out Aaron Boone when he didn't even say anything?
Yeah, I think the pigeon move actually came after the game. He doubled down on it where, he ejects Aaron Boone when it's clear on replay that Aaron Boone said nothing. And in all likelihood, Hunter was reacting to what a fan yelled at him one row behind the Yankees dugout. And you know what? Stuff can happen. Like, and once you eject somebody in the way that he did, then you can't go back on that. You can't say, oh, yes, my bad. Sorry, no, you're still in the game. You ejected him. But when you go into the clubhouse after the game, the umpire's room, and you see a replay, which was available to all of us within 30 seconds, it felt like, with all the audio, then you realize you made a mistake, and you should say to the reporter, you know what? It looks like I made a mistake, and I'm sorry for that. I blew it. As opposed to saying, no, it wasn't the fan at all. And, yeah, if it wasn't Aaron Boone, it was his team, and he needs to control that. It was terrible. Like, the best, I've always, the way professionals handle these situations is you own it. Players are expected to do that every day. Hunter should have done that in this case. The one thing I would say is that while Aaron Boone should not have been ejected, and this is someone who I worked with, he's a, you know, he's a friend, I would say he needs to look at the situation and say, man, all the times they've been getting ejected, the umpires, I don't want to say they're gunning for him, but they clearly are annoyed by him. We saw last year with Laz Diaz, who made fun of Booney when he came out one time, was arguing a call like, yeah, do your shtick, go ahead, you know, Booney, do that. That's not a good place for Booney to be with the umpires, and he needs to learn from this as well.
So, Buster, what was worse, Hunter Wendell stats behavior postgame or the Atlanta Falcons using the 8th pick on Michael Penix?
What were they doing? Right? I mean, before the end of the first round, you got the agent for Kirk Cousins saying, hey, what were you doing? And saying that the Cousins had no awareness of it. He just signed a, what, four-year, $160 million deal? And then he used the first pick in the draft to take an older quarterback. Okay, Penix is not like 19 years old. He's 23, so you would assume they're going to want to play him in the next couple of years. What was the thinking there? You know, maybe it was the best thing for Bill Belichick that he didn't get that job.
No kidding. He's probably like, woo, bullet dodged. All right, we're good here. Yeah, I think your sentiment is shared by most. I've not heard anyone defend the selection yet, but I'm sure someone's got to have some kind of hot take saying, oh, it was a brilliant move by the Falcons. What a maneuver. But I don't know. Good luck to those people because
it was the Falcons GM who's saying that, apparently.
That's right. Maybe his family members.
In the face of all the criticism, it just doesn't make any sense.
I don't
know. You know, make
either.
The team better in other ways when you bring in a veteran quarterback.
Yeah. Totally agree. Buster, you're the best. Have yourself a great weekend, and we'll head down to the Dome this evening to boo Ohtani in your honor, okay?
All right. Well, have fun with that, guys.
Yes.
See ya, pal.
ESPN's Buster Olney. Interesting conversation about the Ohtani thing tonight, and I will be tuned in, that's for sure, at 7 o'clock for his first
you're
gonna
play
appearance.
You're going to be booing him.
And they're going to be booing him, and I'm going to love it. He is probably going to make, oh, you're going to boo me, really? And then he's going to hit three dingers. And he's like, boo me now. Boo me now. We'll hear some of our conversation with Darren Dreger, our hockey insider. My best bet still to come, as well as hour number four here on this Friday morning continues. My best bets powered by FanDuel in 25 minutes. We'll also hear some of our conversation with Darren Dreger, our hockey insider, the latest on William Nylander. That in 10 or less. Last night in the NBA, Philly, after Joel Embiid guaranteed a series win following their Game 2 loss, he goes out and he backs it up, scoring 50 points in the win for the Sixers, 125-114 over New York. He made three threes, an unbelievable performance from Embiid. Kudos to him, clearly battling through. I mean, his knees are all banged up. This guy has dealt with a litany of injuries in his recent run here in the NBA, and this year is no different. Kudos to him. That's a really ballsy performance. And the late game was Denver and the Lakers. Denver was up 2-0, heading back to L.A., and, I mean, as you'd expect, Nikola Jokic, dominant, 24 points, 15 boards, 9 assists. Aaron Gordon had 29 points and 15 boards. Denver wins by 7. The Lakers on the verge of being swept by the Nuggets in round number 1. You wonder what type of questions emerge after that, but Charles Barkley was on, of course, TNT broadcast, as he always is, with the rest of the crew. And apparently LeBron James was taking a little bit too long to go to the podium and speak to the media post-game. Let's just say Charles Barkley was not overly pleased with how it was going.
Are we just going to stay on TV till LeBron come out the shower?
No, we've got...
Because, we got stuff to do.
Like Shaq.
It's 1:19.
Like Shaq and a fool.
Are we just going to sit here until LeBron... LeBron, get your ass out the shower.
Yeah. That is frustrating, and I'm sure you've dealt with the same thing.
Oh, have I ever, buddy.
Like, please. I remember one of my first things I did at TSN 1050 was do the opposing locker room for the Raptors, and it was Orlando... in Toronto, and I believe it was Dwight Howard we were waiting for, and this guy was taking, we're just standing there, it's like, I don't know, 11 o'clock, he's in the shower, you could hear them all laughing in the back as the media is waiting for him, And I guess that's what LeBron was pulling last night. Or maybe he was calling his kid. And it's like, all right, Bronny, where are we playing next year? Because the Lakers, we have no chance to win anymore. We are cooked. And, I mean, if they get swept by Denver, I'd be very curious to know how or if that changes what LeBron does in the offseason. Because he's a player option, right? He could call his shots on his career.
He'll play with Doncic in Dallas.
Doncic. Well, he's got to play with his kid, too, right? They got to draft Bronny.
They'll draft Bronny.
And Doncic and Dallas would be great. His boy Kyrie's there. They had some success, a lot of success together.
Tax-free, get to make more money.
Make more money like LeBron needs it. Maybe
live
Toronto.
Live in this crazy house for half
for
the
$600,000.
A third of the price.
I don't know. Maybe you come to Toronto. I think the prospect of playing with R.J. Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley is really alluring to LeBron James. And I think that's
too much tax
he may,
here, though.
Probably. It's true. It's true. But, you know, the lifestyle's great. Lifestyle's great in Toronto. In the winter, gorgeous weather.
Gorgeous.
So, a lot of good ideas for us here.
Cold weather does good for the old body.
Yeah, exactly. I think I saw there's some speculation about LeBron and Philly, like the connection there. Go play with
I don't understand how people like people crap on Toronto and Canada for winter weather, but like
they'll say, I'll go
to Philly.
Oh, I'll go to Boston. It's the exact same New York. It's the exact same weather in the winter. So yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Now, those basketball teams are all much better than Toronto. Mm-hmm. So yeah, do I think LeBron's coming to Toronto? No. Do I think the Raptors would use a pick on Bronny? I mean, they may as well because
if it guarantees you to get LeBron, you
well,
might as
yes,
well.
Yeah. I think if you were guaranteed to get LeBron, Bronny would probably go first overall in this draft. I know that sounds insane, but would you not rather have a couple years of LeBron James?
If you're the San Antonio Spurs, if you're the San Antonio Spurs and you got Victor Wembanyama and you have a chance to get the first overall pick, and drafting Bronny James guarantees you LeBron James, you get to pair LeBron James with Victor Wembanyama.
It's an interesting question. I think so. And again, it depends on, you know, these kids who are at the top. A lot of these guys are Europeans who we've never heard of or even seen before. The top of the top five, six, seven guys. So it remains to be seen how it all plays out. But that would be something really cool. And I think Bronny's going a lot higher than people think. And I think for the reason you just mentioned is why. Because teams are going to be like, okay, we get Bronny and we get LeBron as well. But I still think he's staying in L.A. I think the Lakers find a way to draft Bronny, and he plays out. Like, why does he want to move? You know, he's got his mansion there. He's 40 years old next year.
Isn't Bronny hitting the transfer portal to go to Ohio State?
Well, I mean, we don't know exactly what he's going to do. Bronny could stay and get drafted. He could transfer to another school. It's still up in the air. But, I mean, I feel like LeBron runs his show. So it's just like, this is what we're doing.
The latest from Brian Windhorst, who obviously knows a lot about the James family, is that he wants to go somewhere where he can play point guard. He thinks his natural position is point guard. So he wants So he wants to go to college where he can play point guard full time.
Or LeBron, like, you're graduating from school. He's like, okay, Dad, whatever.
I can't play any longer. I need to play with you. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Our FanDuel best bets in about 20 minutes. We'll hear from Darren Dreger on Nylander next. So I was watching some Law & Order Toronto edition yesterday, and I was thinking maybe in a later season they could do an episode on the William Nylander mystery. What has been plaguing Nylander, and why has he been out of the lineup? Now, there was some speculation yesterday about migraines with Nylander, and that's where it began with our hockey insider, Darren Dreger, who joined us earlier for Leafs Breakfast. We began by asking him the likelihood that Nylander is back in the lineup tomorrow night in Game 4.
I feel like it's more likely this morning or today than it was earlier in the week. And really, that's based on, Nylander skating as hard as he did on, what day was it? Wednesday, I guess, right? I mean, he went through the morning skate. He took some line rushes on that third line and then stayed out with the healthy scratches for an extended period to, again, push himself to see how he felt and how he responded after that. And, you know, obviously the Leafs are being as tight-lipped as any team in the Stanley Cup playoffs, so there hasn't been much of an update to gauge how he felt, you know, after pushing it the way that he did on Wednesday. So, Yeah, I think we'll hear from Sheldon Keefe today and leading up to game time, the same thing we've heard through the entire stretch in the first three games of the series, that Nylander has missed and that he is possible. But it feels like we're getting to that place where, you know, he's probably more probable than not. So let's see how it plays out. But, you know, again, many reporting what we, you know, kind of thought late last week, and that it could be head-related, migraine-related, but, you know, nobody is verifying or confirming that. And if that's the case, that explains a lot, right? Because it does explain how Nylander, you know, if it's a muscle issue or a back issue, you know, you're probably not pushing the way that he did on Wednesday. So
and you're probably finding a way to play through it too, Dre.
100%. Like, you know, there's different, you know, varieties of treatment and ways, you know, that the medical staff can get you a game ready. Maybe you're not 100% clearly, but you're well enough that you can play. And he hasn't been able to play. You know, it's not through a lack of want. Of course, Willie wants to be in the lineup, but, you know, when you're dealing with something that appears that he's dealing with, maybe it is just time that's needed for the issues to, you know, eventually subside. So, again, the Willie watch continues here for the next 36 hours anyway.
Dregs, we all hope that he returns to the lineup on Saturday and would be a huge boost to this Maple Leafs lineup that desperately needs some extra scoring punch. But if he doesn't play tomorrow, how does that make you feel about his availability for the rest of the series?
Well, see, yeah, I mean, it definitely makes you question it. You know, but this is something I'm sure that the Maple Leafs can't rush, right? I mean, if he doesn't feel well enough to play, and obviously he doesn't, then how do you expedite that process? And you really can't. You can't. And we don't know specifically what he's feeling and what he's dealing with, aside from the speculation. And, you know, if it is migraine-related, I mean, he has some history with that. So, you know, he knows, perhaps knows what it takes, and it might just require time. That's all it is. So, you know, to say that, okay, well, if he doesn't play game four tomorrow, then I'm basically writing him off for game five and potentially the rest of the series. I can't do that, but it does make you wonder, doesn't it? I mean, if you're unavailable for the first four games of the series, the concern then from Nylander's perspective and maybe the Maple Leafs is, okay, well, it hasn't subsided to a point where he can play. So how can you be confident that he would be available for game five or the rest of the series? But, you know, again, we don't know. The Leafs don't know. And Nylander probably doesn't know at this stage.
What do we know about Bobby McMahon's status, Darren? You had some tweets about him and his potential return maybe later in the series. What's the latest on him?
Yeah, well, he's being reevaluated on a daily basis, right? We believe it's knee-related. Don't know the specifics. I've heard MCL, but I don't know, again, how significant the injury is. Significant enough that he's been out for a while. And the only thing that you'll get from sources around the Maple Leafs is that he has not been ruled out for the series. And that's the way it remains. However, again, no different than, you know, the sense that Nylander could be available tomorrow is based on how he skated on Wednesday, as I've already articulated here. You know, Bobby McMahon hasn't skated. So he's going to need at least a couple of decent skates, isn't he, before he's able to go in a playoff game. So I just can't imagine he's available for game four tomorrow. So best case scenario would be game five or game six. But he would be a significant add, right? You know, those are two primary pieces that the Maple Leafs, you know, haven't been able to utilize yet. You know, you look at the 5-on-5 contribution of Bobby McMahon in the second half of the season. The guy can skate. He's physical. He's pretty good around the net.
Can score. When you
add another layer like that, that just makes it more difficult on Swayman or Ullmark or generally on the Boston Bruins in the offensive zone. So he'll be a pretty big boost, a nice add if he's available in game five or game six.
And you look at the struggles the Maple Leafs have had scoring goals. Yeah. I mean, three or more and only once in their last 10 playoff games, which includes five straight home losses. Dregs, yesterday people were talking about, you know, is Swayman in the Maple Leafs' head? You saw both coaches comment on, is Marchand in the Maple Leafs' head? I don't think any of those things are in the Maple Leafs head. I think that what's in the Maple Leafs head is the fact that they need to score more goals, their power play needs to be better, and they need to find a way to get a win on home ice. Don't you agree?
Yep, all of that, yes. And, you know, as Sheldon and the players talked about post-game on Wednesday, it's not like the power play has been bad. You know, they're getting their looks. The puck movement is there. They just they can't put it in the net. And, you know, there's no excuse for that. Now, you know, I'm not going to pile on any one particular player here, but we saw what Auston Matthews was capable of in game two. And I guess, you know, as he's elevated his playing ability, you know, you kind of learn to expect that every single night in the playoffs now from Auston Matthews. And I think that's unfair and it's unrealistic. This guy is going to need some help, and that help, you know, it's got to come in the form of the power play. And, you know, it doesn't always have to be top six, top nine guys. I think the fourth line has been pretty useful for the Maple Leafs. They've been perfect. I mean, you know, they've created some opportunities. They've been real physical on the forecheck. Just in general, I think that line in the minutes they've been given by Sheldon Keefe has been good. But the bottom six has to pop a goal in here or there as well. That's just the recipe for success. But for me, it starts with, you know, having some success on that power play, getting a goal when you need that goal the most. And, you know, how many looks, how many opportunities do you get? I thought the goal that Max Domi scored the other night, that game two, was really going to pop the cork for him, right? And then you see the opportunity that he missed in game three, where the Leafs could have scored back-to-back. Instead, you know, Marchand
stole it from behind the net,
Marchand, you know, snaps it under the bar, and that just flipped the momentum of the game and maybe the series. If Max is able to find a hole and put that one in the net, the outcome of that game is probably different. So that's what Toronto needs. It can't be just about Auston Matthews or what Mitch Marner isn't doing. There are more than two players capable of generating offense for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Darren Dreger, our guest on Leafs Breakfast. Following Boston's Game 2 loss, they put two new defensemen in the lineup. JVR came in. I actually thought he had a lot of jump on Wednesday night, a couple of really good opportunities. Would you anticipate the Maple Leafs maybe making a lineup change beyond Nylander tomorrow night following their Game 3 loss, Darren?
Not really. I mean, what would you be thinking?
TJ Brody. Yeah, that would
Liljegren's coming out.
Yeah, I feel like Brody's coming in. Yeah, that would be my guess.
I think Liljegren's coming out.
Well, if that's the case, we're going to have to strap Jeff O'Neill's head on his shoulders. Because as soon as TJ Brody mismanages that puck, the O-Dog is going to explode. So look, you know, he's got the playoff experience. You know, did we really think that TJ Brody was being exiled to the press box and was never going to resurface? No, of course not, right? I mean, he's a capable defenseman. And, you know, historically, has been good. Maybe there have been stretches this year where he hasn't been so good. Obviously, there's a trust issue there, or he'd be in the lineup. He would have played in the first three games of this series. That hasn't been the case. I definitely, now that we talk about it, I could see that happening, because Liljegren has been a bit sketchy for me to this point.
Well, you look at the moves Boston made. They took Grizzlick out because they just think he's undersized and being overpowered with the physicality that the Leafs are presenting. And you could almost say the same thing about Liljegren.
Yeah.
Like, he's getting manhandled out there. And I know he's been good at skating the puck out at times, but, you know, you look at that third goal, he loses a puck battle.
Yeah.
Right? And maybe it's not TJ Brody that comes in. Maybe it's Mark Giordano that comes in.
Maybe. Have those options, right? And that's what it's been about this year for Brad Treliving and the Maple Leafs, is making sure up front and defensively. Up front is different because you've got the status of Nylander in question. You've got Bobby McMahon, who's injured, but you have depth on that blue line.
Yeah.
So utilize it. If you're not happy with what you're seeing, you know, you don't get another chance. And look, if Toronto doesn't level this series, it becomes pretty obvious and clear, doesn't it? They're in trouble. And with the experience of Brad Marchand and the way that he elevated his game in game three, they get past it going and look out. You know, the Boston Bruins, maybe they can taste the blood in the water. It's not quite there yet. I mean, Toronto has plenty of life left. But, you know, that's where coaches earn their paychecks. It's making those decisions, not just in game, but preparing your lineup for the next one.
Dregs, what would be more surprising to you, the fact that I tell you that Tampa Bay is down 3-0 to the Florida Panthers, or the Florida Panthers are up 3-0 on the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Yeah, that Tampa Bay is down 3, love. I you know, there's still life left in the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, we know this. Again, it's all about the experience factor, the quality of the goaltending, everything that the Lightning can throw at you. I wasn't predicting upset. I think that would have been ridiculous, but I thought that there was at least potential for that in this series because of what I just said, right? You know, you do have the experience factor, and the game of Vasilevsky. I mean, he can steal games. He's done that in the playoffs, but it just hasn't, it hasn't developed for them. And I don't know what's going on at home ice with Tampa Bay, but they can't win. They can't win at Amalie, and that is staggering. It is. But now flip it
it's
over.
It's like the Leafs in Scotia.
Yeah. You know, flip it over to the Florida Panthers, and it just shows us last year was no fluke, and the regular season that the Florida Panthers had and the ads that Billy Zito brought into the equation are just paying dividends. Like, this team is built to win. And, you know, their leaders find a way to lead on the score sheet. Another big night by Matthew Tkachuk. So I guess I'm surprised that the Lightning haven't had an answer for Florida, but I'm not surprised that the Florida Panthers are as dominant as they've been.
Well, we're just one Lightning loss away, Darren, from one of the more interesting offseason debates in a long time with regards to the future of Steven Stamkos in Tampa Bay.
So, are you buying Leaf jerseys already with Stamkos?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure
you
how
should
that
see,
would work.
Let me just share something that's on my Leafs buddies group chat. I hope Tampa loses in four so they fire Cooper. That's
fire
what's going,
Cooper.
Yes, that's what's going on my Leafs group chat with my buddies right now.
That will not be happening. But no Sam kidding. Getting his future. I mean, we'll save that for next week when Tampa's
okay,
out there.
Okay, perfect.
But for now, we'll focus on the Leafs and the Bruins game four tomorrow night. Yeah. Thank you for doing this, and we'll chat with you on Monday morning.
Okay, guys, have a great weekend.
Darren Dreger, our hockey insider. We will have a great weekend, Darren. We'll tee that up and my FanDuel best bets to wrap up a busy Friday morning next.
Money talk.
Here comes the money. Money.
All right, time now for today's best bets. They are powered by FanDuel. So Otani's in town tonight, the Dodgers and the Jays. Otani to record 2+ total bases, -140. Yeah, I think Otani is going to do some damage tonight. Guy's been on fire. Locked that one in against Chris Bassett and the Toronto Blue Jays. I also like Nashville. -110 back at home against Vancouver. We know the struggles of Pettersson, the absence of Thatcher Demko. I like the Preds to get it done in game number 3. And looking at the NBA tonight, Indy is a 6.5-point favorite hosting Milwaukee.
Wow.
I know Giannis remains out, but that's a big number. Maybe Dame time in Indy. I'll roll with Milwaukee plus 6.5 points. Today's best bets. I was getting emotional there. Today's best bets are powered by FanDuel. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today and find thousands of ways to play. Please play responsibly. 19 plus and physically located in Ontario. What's the plan in the household this weekend, Coco?
TGIF, buddy. TGIF. We got a busy morning tomorrow. Got a couple alumni events to do in the afternoon. Watch the Leaf game. And Sunday, probably just do some family stuff.
Maybe watch the Zurich Classic on Sunday?
So help me understand the Zurich Classic. Why is there two people on the leaderboards? Are they playing in pairs?
It's a team event, yeah. It's a team event. We need our boys Cantlay and Shoffley to go low today. Not the finest for first round. We didn't make the cut in our make the cut pool. So we have both of those guys. That was not the wisest choice.
And they're not teammates, are they?
No, they are teammates, yeah. They are
okay,
teammates.
Right on.
Yeah, they'll take care of business today. They'll make the cut. No worries. They always well at this event. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, Monday morning when we reconvene, we'll have a lot of answers on the NFL draft. Round 2 going tonight. Your Bills have the first pick in round number 2. We'll see what they decide to do with that. And the Toronto Maple Leafs, they could either be tied 2-2 heading back to Boston or down 3-1. Pretty much done. So we'll see how it goes on.
Big game. Big game.
Huge
must
game.
Win.
On Sunday night at 8 o'clock. Yes, Guys Show is coming up on the other side with Jim Taddy. Thanks to 20 Fingers. Thanks to Rod. Thanks to Cameron. Excellent work today behind the scenes as well. the dream trio behind the scenes for us here on First Up. But Carlo, Monday morning at 6 a.m. It's going to be a big
we'll one. We'll chat then. One.
Yeah, we will.
Ciao.
Gio Sakic.
Formula One lives on TSN with every race all season long. And with TSN Plus, go that extra mile with onboard cameras, pit lane channel, and more.
Boy, is it good here.
F1 lives on TSN and TSN Plus.